We're just about there. It's been a pretty short year, pretty quick. Yeah, sure. And the challenge we realized during the year is really, can we become the sort of people who can get close? Can we be the sort of people who can get close to God, to daven to Him? Are we the sort of people who can get close to each other and to think of the other first? Are we the sort of people who can actually get close between the body and the soul? The body recognizes there is a soul, the soul recognizes there is a body. Is it possible for us to achieve these various forms of intimacy? Now, given that you've been working hard, so you've noticed that just trying harder is not enough. And it sometimes seems like it's just impossible to make the changes that are required to achieve closeness, to remove the barriers, the selfishness, the biases, the personal preferences that get in the way of really drawing close to those who we want to love. By the time that Shavuos rolls around, it's pretty clear that the only way that someone could achieve real intimacy, I mean complete connection, is to somehow miraculously clean away all of the sort of dirt on the surfaces that prevents a perfect connection. So the question is, how do you achieve that miracle? How do you achieve that nais that will allow for the real closeness we want to achieve? And the answer to that question is Shavuos. Okay, so let's begin. Three questions. First, the Gemara describes the scene when Moshe goes up to get the Torah. And the Gemara, this is in Shabbos, Daf Pei Ches Amud Beis, says the following. I'm Rabbi Shul ben Levi. Rabbi Shul ben Levi taught, B'shash ala Moshe lamarim, when Moshe went up into the heavens, Amru malachei asharis lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the angels cried out in front of Hashem, Ribono shel olam, Master of the universe, Maliyu l'risha beinenu, what is a human child doing here? What is a human being doing up here? Amar lehen, so Hashem said, L'kabel Torah ba, Moshe came up to get the Torah. Amru l'fanov, so the angels immediately objected. Chamuda gnuza, this precious hidden thing. Shegnuza l'cha tisha me'os v'shivim v'arba doros kodem shenivra olam, that was hidden away 974 generations before the world was ever created. Atam avakish litin l'basar v'dam, you're going to go ahead and give this thing over to human beings, to flesh and blood? So, instead of jumping in to defend Moshe in his quest for the Torah, Hashem says, Amar lo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, Hechzir lehem tshuva, Moshe, you defend yourself. So, Moshe thinks quick, looks back at God and says, Ribono shel olam, Master of the universe, Torah shata noten li, this Torah that you're giving me, maksiv ba, what's written in her? So Hashem answers, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Otzeisicha, Me'eretz Mitzrayim, I am God your Lord, who took you out of the land of Egypt. Amar Moshe lehen, Moshe spins around, faces the angels and says, L'mitzrayim yiradatem? Did you ever go down to Mitzrayim? L'paro hishtabartem? Were you ever enslaved to Paro? Torah, lama tehelechem? Why should the Torah go to you? It's not shaykh to you. It doesn't belong to you. It doesn't apply to your sorts of lives. It's something dafka for us, the Jews. The angels stand there stunned. And Moshe continues with his attack. Shuv maksiv ba, what else is written there, God? Hashem gives him more ammunition. Lo yelach elokim acherim. There shouldn't be any other gods for you. So Moshe turns back to the angels. Bein ha'amim atem shiruim she'ovdin avodah zarah. Did you ever live among non-Jews who worshipped avodah zarah? The angels are stunned. Shuv maksiba. What else is written there, Moshe says? Hashem bellows out, Zachor is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. Keep Shabbos. So Moshe turns to the angels. Klum atem osim malacha she'atem tzrichim shvus. You guys don't do malacha. You don't do any work. Why would you need a Shabbos? Shuv maksiba. What else is there, God? Kaveinus avicha v'simecha. Honor your mother and your father. He turns to them. Ave'im yishlechem. Do you have a mom? Do you have a dad? Shuv maksivba. Hashem, give it to me. Let me have it. What else is written there? Hashem says, Lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, lo tignov. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Moshe turns to them. Kina yesh b'neichem? Do you experience jealousy? Yetzahara yesh b'neichem? Do you have a Yetzer Hara? The angels have no answer. Miyad hodu lo leHaKadosh Baruch Hu. Immediately the angels said, okay, God, we admit the Torah belongs to Moshe. Moshe takes the Torah and heads down. Now, there are two lessons that are obvious from this Talmudic passage. One is this, that really there are two worlds. There's a physical world, the world that we live in. There's another world. There's the world of the angels, the world that Moshe ascended into. And in that world, there is no physicality whatsoever. In fact, in that world, it's clear, there's even no Yetzer Hara. There's no evil. It's a world of pure light, pure goodness. More. It's obvious from this Talmudic passage that our Torah is only necessary down here in this world. For the Torah came to resolve the human dilemma, to provide a way for people to overcome their selfishness and to get close, to make it heaven on earth, but down here on earth. Like the Gemara in Kedushin says, the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Lamed, Barati Yetzara. I, God, created the Yetzara. I created the evil that fills the streets out there. Barati Torah Tavlin. Don't worry. I created the Torah as the antidote, as a spice that will sweeten the Yetzer and make a person good. So what do you see? You see that there is a Yetzara, but don't worry. God gave us the Torah. So, on the one hand, this is very exciting. We've got the solution. If you really want to make the world a better place, starting right here with number one, so it can be done. I've got the Torah. Thank God. And I feel like I owe him so much because he gave us the solution. And if you think one step deeper, it will hit you. But wait a minute. He's the one who created the Yetzer in the first place. Like, what am I thanking him for? He made the problem. So the big question is, question number one, why did God create a world in which the Torah was necessary? Why do that? Why create a world that would require Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah? Question number two. There is a Gemara in Kedushin, Daf Pei Beis. The Gemara there says, Matzimisha Asa Avram Avinu et Kol HaTorah Kulo Ad Shelo Nitna. We have a tradition. My great-great-great-great-great-grandfather's great-great-great-grandfather passed a tradition down all the way back from Har Sinai, 3,300 some odd years ago, that my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, Avraham, kept every mitzvah, de'araisa and de'rabbanan, whether it was Torahitic or rabbinic, long before the Torah was ever given. So what do you see? You see that the Torah is, pardon the term, figure-outable. What does that mean? Since the whole Torah was just created so that we could live perfect lives in this world, theoretically what could happen is someone could take a good, hard, deep look at reality, at the physical world that we live in, and they could figure out exactly what the purpose of this world is. And since the whole purpose here is to live as a perfect human being, as a moral, refined, God-fearing, God-loving person who achieves intimacy in their lives, since that is the whole goal, theoretically, and everything in the universe was just created to allow that, to facilitate that, theoretically, someone could look at the universe, study each detail of the universe, and figure out the entire Torah. And indeed, that's what Avraham Avinu did on his own. He was able to figure out every mitzvah, deraisa and derabbanan, because he understood looking at the world. That's how it's got to be. More. It's not just Avraham Avinu, who seems to have kept the Torah long before it was given. If you look in Bereishis Chaf Zayin Tes, Genesis 27:9, you'll find there that Yitzchak asks his son, who he believes is Esav, to please bring him food to eat. So what does he ask for? He says he wants shnei gediyei izim. He wants two goats. Okay, now, how much do you think a goat weighs? 50 pounds? 100 pounds? Right? After you get rid of all the bones, what do you got left? 20 pounds of meat? One goat, right, would have a lot of flesh on it. And Yitzchak feels like having a, you know, a quick snack. And he says, could you bring me two goats? Not one goat, two goats. So you're like, I would understand if he said, you know, could I have a salad with some tofu, you know, like a little, you know, soy milk or something. I would understand even if he said, you know, I'd like a hamburger. A quarter pounder. A half pounder. A pounder, that's a lot. Right? A goat, a full goat, two full goats? What is he asking for? So Rashi on the spot says what he needed it for. Rashi says, "V'chi shnei gdei izim hayamaychlo shel Yitzchak." Did Yitzchak eat this much food? He needed two goats. Elo Pesach haya. It was Pesach time. He'echod hikriv lePesach. One of the goats he brought as a korban Pesach. Ve'echod asamat amim, and the other one he made into delicious food to eat. Or was going to have made into delicious food to eat. Now, we now know Yitzchak kept Pesach. Pesach, which many people believe is the commemoration of the Exodus from Egypt, right, happened a long time after Yitzchak lived. So given that that's the case, what was Yitzchak doing keeping Pesach? The answer is, Mr. the Torah. Mr. You got to keep Pesach. What, you're not going to do Korban Pesach? You're not going to eat matzahs? Yeah? Father, you got to keep Pesach. What's the question? So what do you see? You see either, and it's not clear from this medrash, but either Yitzchak inherited from his father, Avraham, the whole Torah, or Yitzchak on his own figured out again. Either way it comes out, if the Torah is figure-outable or inheritable, then why is it that 3,300 years ago, when the Jews were standing at Mount Sinai, Moses had to go up on the mountain and bring the Torah down? For what? Didn't the Jews have a tradition? And more, the Gemara says, in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, the Jews had certain merits which allowed them to be redeemed. Yeah? So, there's various versions of what those merits were. But according to all the different versions, they were keeping parts of Torah in Mitzrayim. So what do you see? You see, the Jews had Torah. Certainly, right, among the rabbis, Moshe Rabbeinu and friends, there probably was a complete tradition. And even if there wasn't, so let them look at nature and figure it out. Why does Moshe have to go up onto the mountain and bring the Torah down? Question number one, why create a world where the Torah is necessary. Question number two, why did Moshe have to go up on the mountain and bring the Torah down? Why couldn't the Jews just figure it out or inherit it? Question number three. Tonight, when three stars come out, we'll begin the holiday of Shavuos. What are we going to be celebrating? So, tonight, which will be the 6th of Sivan, it's not at all clear what we're celebrating. I'll explain why. There is a disagreement in the Gemara and Shabbos, Daf Pei Vav Amud Beis. The Talmud there describes an argument over when the Torah was actually given. According to the Tanna Kamma, the first opinion in the Gemara, the Torah was given tonight on the 6th of Sivan. However, there's a second opinion in the Gemara, Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi argues, and Rabbi Yossi says, no, the Torah was not given on the 6th of Sivan. The Torah was given the next day, on the 7th of Sivan. Okay, now if you think about this Talmudic passage, it's very confusing for several reasons. Okay. We'll start like this. Perhaps the most confusing aspect of this Gemara is, if you look at the post scheme, the legal authorities. So, for instance, the Magen Avraham in Or HaChaim, Siman Tav Tzadi Dalad, Dibur Maskil Kashali, he says there as follows. He says, what day was the Torah really given? When do we paskin the Torah was given? According to the halacha. So, of course, you know, we always celebrate Shavuos tonight on the 6th of Sivan. So you know, in fact, that the halacha comes out that the Torah was in fact given really on the 7th of Sivan, the day after Shavuos. Okay, now, this is disconcerting because it means that we're going to be celebrating Shavuos on the wrong night tonight. And even worse, it means that we've been celebrating Shavuos on the wrong night for 3,300 years. Because when the Torah is first given, according to the halacha, it was given on the 7th of Sivan. And Shavuos always falls on the 6th of Sivan. So what on earth have we been celebrating for the last 3,300 years on the 6th of Sivan? It's the wrong day. A second problem here. This morning, I said Birkas HaTorah. We say a blessing before we learn Torah. When I said Birkas HaTorah, I said, Baruch Atah Hashem, blessed are you God, no sein HaTorah. The giver of the Torah, no sein means he is giving it right now. Now realize, if in fact the Torah was given on the 7th of Sivan, like the halacha is, Rabbi Yossi, or even if it was given on the 6th of Sivan, right, like the Tanna Kamma, who we don't paskin like. So either way, the blessing, at least for the majority of the year, should not be no sein HaTorah, giving the one who is giving the Torah. The blessing should be, let's say, starting 6 months before Shavuos, we should say, blessed are you, Lord our God, sheyitein HaTorah, that he will give us the Torah in 6 months when Shavuos comes. Then on Shavuos day, the blessing should change. Yeah? Like, you know how during the whole 10 days of tshuva, so we ask that Hashem should write us in the book of life. But then on Yom Kippur, the blessing changes. And it says, right at the end of Yom Kippur, we say he should seal us in the book of life. So you see, we change blessings when the time calls for it. On Shavuos, we should change the blessing. Instead of saying, yitein HaTorah, he will give us the Torah, we should say, no sein HaTorah, he's giving us the Torah right now. And then, starting on the 8th of Sivan, we should say, blessed are you, Lord our God, she, not Tana Torah, who gave us the Torah. Right? And we should say that for another 6 months. And then at the 6 month mark, when we start heading back towards Shavuos again, we should start saying Yitena Torah again. Yeah? But what is this thing that all year we say no Santa Torah? Why is that? Okay. So question number one, why create a world where the Torah is necessary? Question number two, why was there a need for the Torah to be given? Why couldn't we figure it out or inherit it? And question number three, what on earth are we going to be celebrating on Shavuos night? Okay, now we can begin. Here we go. Why create a world where the Torah is necessary? We'll start with a very, very broad theoretical picture, and then we'll slowly focus in. We don't know much about God. The little bit we know because God revealed those things about himself to us. And one of the things we know is that God is pure love. And all he wants to do is give to me and care for me and give to you and take care of you, right? And pour goodness upon us. That's all he wants. Now, given that that's what he wants, he really has a choice in front of him. If he wants, he could pour upon us infinite gifts. After all, he owns the bank. But if he did that, he would turn us all to charity cases. So a much higher kindness would be if instead of giving us free gifts, if he gave us the opportunity to create our own perfection, if he gave us the opportunity to create our own salary, so to speak, what we would eat for eternity, our own human perfection, if we could be the architects of our own perfection, that would be the ideal. And then whatever we walk away with, it's not a free gift. We earned it. In that way, there's less shame, and it also makes us more godlike, because God himself doesn't receive his gifts, his perfection as a gift from the outside. God himself is intrinsically perfect. His perfection flows with it from within him. So he gives us the opportunity to be like him, that our perfection should flow from within us as well. This is indeed what the Medrash says, an amazing Medrash in Tanhuma. And we probably haven't been ready to hear this until this point in the year, but I think now you'll be able to hear it and appreciate what it's saying. The Medrash Tanhuma in Parshas Tavo says like this. Am Rabbi Yochanan Tat, Kol ha'ose Torah la'amita, anyone who performs Torah truthfully, properly, in the way it's supposed to be performed, and we'll have to see what that is. Ma'ale alav hakosuv. The verse credits him, ki'ilu hu asat atzmo, as if he created himself. Why? Because as I perform mitzvahs, I draw forth my potential. I create a perfect human being. So at the end, when I pass out of this world, when I pass through that filter, that reality filter called death, and I pass through and it blocks out everything that is still potential, everything that is still illusion that I have not yet brought into reality, all of that is stopped at that filter called death. And I pass through on the other side, the me that exists is the me that I created by doing mitzvahs. By acting properly, I brought forth my potential. I actually became someone. And then for eternity, I live as whoever I made myself into. That's also what's meant by the pasuk in Mishlei. The verse in Mishlei, in Proverbs 4:13, reads as follows. Hachzeik b'musar, al teref. Hold tight, Shlomo Melech said, unto Musar. Don't loosen your grip. Nitzreha, guard her. Ki hi chayecha. For she, Musar, is your life. So the Vilna Gaon, Mr. Meat and Potatoes of Halacha, jumps in here and says, Shlomo Melech, what are you talking about? What do you mean Musar is my life? That Torah is my life. Mitzvahs are my life. What do you mean, Musar is my life? And the Gaon writes like this. He says, Ki ma sha'adam chai, that a person is still alive? Who can daily spor midah shelo shavra ad heina? It's an order to perfect a trait which you have not yet perfected. Some character trait. Ulechein, tzarech tamid lehitchazek. Therefore, you must constantly strengthen your grip on Musar, on this Torah process of bringing forth your potential. Vim lo yitchazek. If you don't constantly strengthen yourself, lama lo chaim. Why bother living? What did I get up for this morning? Why am I breathing? If not to make some sort of a change, if I can't go to sleep tonight, a little bit different than I got up. So why did I bother today? Since the whole purpose of life is for me to bring forth my potential. The Gaon says, that's it. That's all you got to do all day. Strengthen your grip on Torah and mitzvahs for the sake of changing your character. That's called Musar. And we can change. Not in superficial ways that go away when we're under stress. We can make deep and permanent change in ourselves, but it requires a miracle. But a miracle that we have access to. The Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Samach Dalad, says that Avram Avinu and Sarai Menu were not capable of having children. In fact, it goes so far as to say Sarah had no womb. She didn't have the equipment to have children. It was impossible. And there's this famous scene where Hashem comes to Avram in Lech Lecha, and he says, Al tira Avraham, don't worry Avraham, Anochi magen lecha, I'm going to guard you, Schar chahar be meod, you're going to have a lot of reward. So Avraham says, what do you mean I'm going to have a lot of reward? Through what? Through the merits of my children? I'm not going to have children. So Hashem says to him, Lo yirash chazeh, don't worry. Your servant, Eliezer, he's not going to be the one to inherit you. You think you're not going to have children to inherit? You'll see. He says, Ki im asher yetzim me'echa hu yereshcha. The one who will come forth from your loins, he will inherit you. You and Sarah are going to have a kid. Not Ishmael. There's going to be another kid, and he will inherit you. Avram and Sarah, they're elderly at this point, right? Sarah doesn't have the equipment. He's an old man. There's no way. The next verse says, "Vayotzi oto hachutza." Hashem then took him, quote unquote, out. What does it mean? Hashem took him out. So the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Nun Vav, says on the spot, "Am Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav." Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav Tat. Amar Avraham lifnei Kodesh Baruch Hu. Avraham said in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem, nistakalti bitztagnino sheli. I looked at my mazel. I saw the sum total of my nature and my nurture there in the stars. And Hashem, it's just, as they say, not in the stars. I'm not going to have kids. Any ra'ui l'holi ben, I'm not capable of having this child. Amar lei. Hashem said, come with me, let me take you out. Tzei mitztagninu shelcha. Leave your mazel. Ein mazel Yisrael. A Jew is not bound by their nature and their nurture. We can rise above nature. There is a way. By the way, this is one of the fundamental points on which secular culture, the culture that I was raised in America, and Torah separate. How? Because there is this perspective in the best of secular America that this is who I am. I mean, I'm only human. What do you want from me? This is the way I was born. And if these are my genes, you can't ask more than me of that. That's it. Even in the programs in America, the like self-help programs where people believe they're going to change, they always say, one day at a time. Yeah? Because at any day you could slip back in again. And they know that. And you know what? They're right. If you are dealing with a secular self-help system, you can, at a very superficial level, change your behavior. But under stress, you will flip right back in again. Unless there's fundamental changes made in the guts of a human being, you're stuck. If you will ever go visit a meeting of one of the best self-help groups in America, I believe, one of the groups that I am most supportive of and most advocate that people participate in, these 12-step groups. So if you go to the meeting, they have Alcoholics Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, these types of groups. If you go to that one of those meetings, so a guy stands up in the meeting and he says, hello, my name is Harold Schwartz and I'm a recovering, and you just insert the word, right? Alcoholics, right? Alcoholic or narcotics addict, or I'm a recovering overeater. Now, the reality is that Harold Schwartz might not have touched alcohol in 30 years. When he introduces himself, he still says, right, hello, I'm Harold, and right, I'm recovering. Because he is. Because the essential flaw is still there, and he knows it, and he could slip back in at any moment. And he's right, and it's responsible for 12 steps people to know that. However, have you ever noticed that in a yeshiva, when a guy gets up to introduce himself, he doesn't say, hello, my name is Leib Kellerman, and I'm a recovering chiloni. I'm a recovering secularist. We don't say that. I say, hi, Leib Kellerman, Baal Tshuva, nice to meet you. I'm there. I'm in a different headspace. I'm a different man. I'm not the same person as I used to be. Something has deeply changed. Why? Because within Torah, you actually can change. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter wrote this. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter in his 30th letter says, a person shouldn't say, quote, that which Hashem made cannot be changed. And God gave me these evil inclinations. So what hope do I have of changing them? Rather, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, one should say, bad traits can be controlled and even uprooted entirely and replaced with good traits. So we are capable of doing this, but it does require a little bit of magic. It requires a nace, a miracle. Question number one, why was it necessary for God to create a world in which the Torah was necessary? So the answer is, because he wanted to give us the opportunity to fix ourselves. He didn't want to create us perfect, like the angels. He wanted us to be the masters of our own perfection. Question number two, why was it necessary for Moshe to go up and bring the Torah down? The Midrashim, the Achronim as well, the Nefesh HaChaim, point out that Avraham Avinu not only performed mitzvahs, but he performed the mitzvahs with certain kavanos, with certain intentions. And these intentions allowed him to make changes in his personality, to make these sorts of deep, permanent changes we're speaking about. The Ramchal explains further. Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzater, the great 18th century Kabbalist. In the Derech Hashem, section 147, he says like this. He says, this is an amazing insight. You and I know that performing mitzvahs has a spiritual effect on the world. The Ramchal reveals it's not just performing mitzvahs. In fact, any mundane action that you engage in, eating, drinking, sleeping, yes, walking, any mundane physical act you do can actually have a spiritual, mystical impact on your personality if you perform that act with the appropriate intention. Without getting too deep, the basic intention is that I'm doing this not for myself. I'm doing this for an altruistic motive. For instance, I'm now going to drink water so that my body is hydrated, so I can function properly and do mitzvahs with enthusiasm, alacrity, right, happiness for the next half hour. Yeah. I'm now going to eat food so that I have calories to do good. I'm now going to go to sleep so I can wake up in the morning well-rested, right, and be able to help people and do mitzvahs, serve Hashem. As long as my intention is pure like that, even a mundane act actually has some effect on personality. The key here, though, is that the amount of punch, spiritual power, that's behind any one of these mundane acts is entirely determined by how pure the intention is. The more altruistic I am, the more punch it has. The more selfish I am in the act, the more I'm thinking about how I want to eat the food. So then the less impact that has on my personality. I'll share something with you. There's a Gemara in the very, very beginning of Tractate of Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara describes the following, that at the end of days, the Gentile world will come to God. And they say to God, Master of the universe, we've built many bridges and conquered many cities. And now we see we did all this for the Jews. Okay. According to the Sif Sechaim, what's their complaint? What's their claim? They're saying like this, God, we didn't have mitzvahs, but we did a lot of mundane acts. We built bridges, we did heart surgery, yes, invented cell phones. Look at all these great things we did. And in retrospect, we see it was all helping with your plan, God, because all of this technology, all of the exterior world that we built, it all eventually helped the Jews bring Mashiach. So now, God, give us our reward. Everything we did really led to Mashiach, to the state of human perfection. Give us our reward. And God turns back to them and says, but you only had the intention to do these things for yourselves. I'm not going to give you a reward. So what's his answer? His answer is this. What you were doing were not mitzvahs. You were doing mundane acts. Whenever you're engaged in a mundane act, how much spiritual punch it has is entirely dependent on intention. Your intention, he says to the Gentile nations, was entirely selfish. And therefore, I can't give you a reward for that. If you had positive intention, altruistic intention, then I could give you a reward. Or if you were doing mitzvahs, then I could give. But without proper intention, the mundane acts are empty. So on the one hand, you have ordinary, mundane physical acts, which if done with the right intention, have punch. And that's a sliding scale. How much intention you have determines the amount of punch. On the other hand, there are mitzvahs. The mitzvahs are not at all like mundane acts. With a mitzvah, it's pass-fail. It's not a sliding scale. You either have the minimal intention that's necessary, or it's a zero. And if you have the minimal intention that's necessary, then the impact of a mitzvah is infinite. The impact on you and on the rest of the world is infinite. Every single mitzvah. What's the minimal intention? So the minimal intention is what we call lishma. That you have to know that you're doing this act not because it makes your life more meaningful. And not because it's a healthy lifestyle. And not because it makes you happy. Lishma means I'm doing this because it makes God happy. He likes it. I'm doing it for someone outside of myself. I'm doing it for God. If I can get to that level where my intention is for God, then, boom, the mitzvahs work. Now, there's various opinions about exactly what constitutes lishma. The highest level lishma would be, I'm doing it for God and only for God, and I have no other intention. That's a very high level to reach. There's lower levels. There's one level that's described by one of the achronim. He says, it's considered lishma if you walk up to a person, you say to them, excuse me, you're in the middle of eating right now. Tell me, do you think there's a God? And the guy says to you, well, maybe. You say, listen, tell me, if there's a God, do you think he's perhaps happy with what you're doing right now? You're eating, you're taking care of your body, giving yourself energy to continue to do good for other people. Do you think he might be happy with that? So the guy says, perhaps. So according to some achronim, that's called lishma. Thank God. That gets us in the door. Yeah. But a mitzvah minimally, to have the punch, you have to have that intention of lishma. So paskens the Gemara in Brachos, mitzvahs tzrichas kavana. You have to have the right intention. You have to have a pure intention. But a little bit, and then you get maximum punch from every mitzvah. So here's how it comes out. It comes out that if you want to have infinite effects on yourself and the universe, you have to have mitzvahs. Or to translate it, you have to have commandments. Mitzvahs aren't nice deeds. They're things you were commanded to do. Only when you're commanded to do something does it have the maximum punch. This is the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Lamed Aleph. Gadol hamitzuv osa mishe'enu mitzuv osa. How much greater is somebody who's commanded and then does the mitzvah than someone who just volunteers to do a nice act? Why? Because when I volunteer to do a nice act, it's very likely I'm doing the nice act because I think it's nice. When I'm doing a mitzvah, I'm doing it because he asked. I'm out of myself. My focus is on the other. What does he want? We can now answer the question. We had the whole Torah before Moshe went up on the mountain. We knew all the mitzvahs already. Why did Moshe need to go up on the mountain? He needed to go up on the mountain so that he could bring down commandments, so that God would command the Jews, from now on, from this point forth, I command you to live perfectly. Before then, you were living perfectly on your own. You had figured it out, but now I'm going to move you out of what we call reshus, that you're doing it just because you want to do the right thing, and I'm going to move you into complete altruism, the essence of perfect love. Now do it just because it makes me happy. This is the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, this Kabbalist, writing in the Das Tfunis, in section 158, he says, Koach ha'avoda atzma, this power the Jews possess to change themselves and to lift the whole universe up with them, eino nitin lehem ela miyado yisbarach. They only got that power from God's hand. And when did they get it? Zema shenatan lehem v'shas matan Torah. This power was given to them at the time of the giving of the Torah. And the truth is, this is all that was given to us. The mitzvahs we had, we just weren't mitzuva, we weren't commanded yet. And then the Ramchal goes on, and he says, Umash mekayim umechadish lekol echad ve'echad tamid. That since Matan Torah, every single second, millisecond since then, God has renewed this transmission of commandments to every single Jew. V'tiri, Shezeu inyan hefresh shebein mitzuva osa lemisha einu mitzuva osa. Listen carefully. This is the difference. This is the secret difference between someone who's commanded and someone who does it just because they're a nice person. Ki adam ha-mitzuva yesh koach biyado. Once you've been commanded, you have a power in your hand. Masur mimenu yisbarach, given over by God. Shitakin b'masav adikunim ha-mitztarachim b'briya. That you, with your actions, can perfect those broken parts of creation that need repair. Ma she'enu kein, she'enu mitzuva. Which someone who is not commanded cannot do. V'tiri, shezeh ma she'asa adon baruch hu li'Yisrael b'har Sinai. This is the transformation that took place at Har Sinai. Either on the 6th of Sivan or the 7th of Sivan. We'll see. The answer to the second question, why did Moshe Rabbeinu need to go up and get the Torah? He had to go up and get the Torah, not because we needed the information. He had to go up and get the Torah so that God would command us in the Torah, so that each one of us could then be hardwired into the universe, and as we perfect ourselves, we could then drag the whole universe up with us. Question number three. What are we going to be doing tonight? Tonight's the 6th of Sivan. Not the night that Rabbi Yossi and the Mogen Avraham Paskins that the giving of the Torah actually took place. We can start towards an answer by looking at that question. Why do we say, blessed are you, the giver of the Torah, the one who's giving us the Torah now? The rules which apply constantly in this world, we call nature. Any rule that's constant is called nature. Gravity, the electromagnetic force, nuclear strong force, nuclear weak force. You name the rule, law of inertia, anything that's constant is called natural. Your goal and my goal is to overcome nature, to break out of the system. But there cannot be a constant law within the system which allows you to rise above nature. Why? Because if there was a constant law in the system, that would also be called natural. And you wouldn't be rising above. You'd be locked into it again. So therefore, the exception, the window of opportunity that you jump through in order to escape nature, it has to be momentary. If it's eternal, if it's constant, so then it's part of nature and you haven't escaped. So there must be a momentary window through which you jump when you want to escape nature. How often can this window present itself? So the truth is, it could present itself once a year, it could even present itself twice a year. Even if the window appeared six times a year, it would still each time be a violation of nature since it's not constant. More. The window could appear 100,000 times a year. Since each time is an interruption of the laws of nature, it would still be a way to break loose of the natural bonds. Even more, the window could be presented every single millisecond. A separate window. God could will that nature be stopped, that an opportunity be presented for me to change my midos. And that could be happening every single split second, and it would still be considered supernatural because each second is a separate interruption. Perhaps that's what's meant by the blessing. Blessed are you, Lord our God, no saint of Torah, who is at this moment presenting Torah, the window that you jump through when you want to change your midos. Go another step. Simply providing the window through which to jump does not constitute Matan Torah. Why? Imagine that I reach into my pocket and I pull out a $100 bill. And I extend the $100 bill towards you. Have I now given you a $100 bill? No. In order for there to be a giving, I must not only extend the $100 bill towards you, but you actually have to reach out, grab it, and pull it back towards you. In order for there to be a giving, there has to be a giver, and there has to be a receiver. There has to be a transmitter. There has to be a receiver. It's a two-step process. Keep this in mind. Go one third step. You cannot command somebody to enter into the state of being mitzuva v'osa, of being commanded. If I command you to enter into the state of being commanded, you're already commanded. You never entered. You never volunteered. You never put yourself into the state of, I accept, I want to be commanded. Therefore, in order to move into that state of being commanded, you first have to jump in and volunteer, like entering the draft. I want to be commanded, you say, as you enter the army building. Then they say, okay, now you've entered. Now you will enter the state of being commanded. When God came to the Jews on the 6th of Sivan, which we all agree, God came to the Jews on the 6th of Sivan and said, the Torah is now available. For the first time ever, if you want, you may enter the state of being commanded, and I will command you in the Torah. However, God did not say, I command you to enter that state. He couldn't, because the Jews weren't commanded yet. At that point, Moshe Rabbeinu, on his own, said, God, thank you for the offer. We'll be back to you in 24 hours. And the entire 6th of Sivan, the Jews did not receive the Torah. God offered it, but the Jews did not receive it. Instead, what they did was, they worked themselves into a state of being concerned about the other, the state of being the perfect spouse, the state of being what we call a real lover, an ohev. An ohev from the word hav, to give. They worked themselves into a state where all we care about is what you want, Hashem. In other words, they prepared themselves to be commanded. They got ready to get married. If you think about it, that's really what marriage is. When you get married, what you're saying is, I would like to know for the rest of my life what makes my significant other happy. And everything that they articulate from this point forward as a preference, for me is a command. As the trite saying goes, your wish is my command. That's what it means to be married. In this case, the Jews were preparing for a relationship with their significant other, capital O. And they wanted to work themselves up into a state where all they wanted was to do the will of their significant other. There's no machlokus, there's no disagreement between the Tanakhama, the first authority in the Gemara that says the Torah was given on the 6th of Sivan, and Rabbi Yossi, who says the Torah was actually given on the 7th of Sivan. They both agree what happened. On the 6th of Sivan, Hashem said the Torah is available. The transmitter started, but there was no receiver. On the 7th of Sivan, after 24 hours of preparation, the Jews actually achieved the state of, all we want to do is what you want, God. And as the Chag was completed, as the holiday finished on the 6th of Sivan, and three stars came out on the 7th of Sivan, when Shavuos ended, the Jews received the Torah. They were commanded. Every year since Shavuos, 3,300 years ago, we go through the exact same process again. Let me ask you something. Aren't you bothered? What is the mitzvah of Shavuos? Start back. What's the mitzvah of Sukkos? So you shake a lulav and an etrog, sleep in a sukkah. There's stuff to do. What's the mitzvah of Pesach? Matzah, maror, 4 cups of wine. What's the mitzvah of Shavuos? Cheesecake? What's the mitzvah? What are you supposed to do? And if you say the mitzvah is to stay up all night and learn, open up a Mishnah Berurah and try to find that. Some place where it says a Jew is chayav to stay up and learn on Shavuos night. By the way, you do find that Jews are chayav to stay up on Pesach night. Right? There you're supposed to stay up after the Seder and continue to learn, right, through all the details of the story of the Exodus. Right? And there is a custom that we stay up all the way until sunrise on the morning after Pesach. But where do you see that a Jew is obligated to stay up on Shavuos night? There's no such obligation. Zero. And yet, you know, there's a custom that the last 3,300 years the Jews stayed up every Shavuos night. So what's that all about? So the answer is, of course there's no mitzvah. It's taking place on the 6th of Sivan. We're not commanded yet. Why do we stay up? Because we want so bad to be commanded. It's like my wife had a diary. And in the diary were a list of all of her favorite things. And I had no idea. And I discovered the diary. I said, honey, you got a diary? Can I take a look at this thing? She says, sure. Right? You'll be especially interested in page 25 where I list off all my favorite things. Do you think I'm going to start with page 3? I'm there. I'm on page 25. Hannah, what do you like? That's what I want to know. On Shavuos night, we are being the perfect spouse. We're preparing ourselves for the perfect relationship. Hashem, what do you want? I can't go to sleep. I got to know. What mitzvahs do you have for me? Tell me, how do you want me to live? What makes you happy? I can't go to sleep. I know I'm not commanded yet. I'm showing you I want to be commanded. If I'm successful, then when 3 stars come out at the end of the 6th of Sivan, as the 7th of Sivan arrives, I'm ready to receive the Torah. That's when the Torah is given. Not during the day on the 6th. So tonight is the night the Jews did what we're going to do, which is preparing ourselves for Ahava. Preparing ourselves for this relationship. If our minds are filled on Shavuos with this dream, Hashem, I just want to do your mitzvahs. That's not the top thing on my mind right now. I admit it. But I just want to do your mitzvahs. And I learned Torah on Shavuos for the sake of wanting to do his mitzvahs. That's my whole goal. To wanting to be married. So then, when the 7th comes, we'll get the Torah. The little window will open, and we'll be able to make the change. It turns out that the secret to unlocking your personal potential, the secret to making these deep permanent changes, is Ahava. Is getting oneself into a state of, I don't really care so much about what I want. What do you want? It's been a long year, although it passed very quickly. And we've done preparations, serious preparations leading up to this point. If we can just pass successfully through this Chag, we'll walk away with that golden key that we started pursuing in Elul. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu bless us that this year we should actually achieve a little feeling of Avo, that we love you, Hashem, and we just want to do what you want us to do. May the window open. May we jump through this window of opportunity. May we make the changes, the permanent, deep changes in our personality that we so badly want to make. May Hashem be happy with our service, and may He bring Mashiach b'mehera v'yameinu.